This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening, everybody. This is Vasma Farhat of the People Speak Radio. We're here on Pal Talk, along with our board operator, Carrie Minaj, in the background. And this is a very special edition of the People Speak this evening, and we're very proud to have with us our guest, Arsalan Iftikhar. Arsalan is the National Legal Director of CARE, the Council on American and Islamic Relations. Please feel free to join us on Pal Talk by going to www.paltalk.com, downloading the software, and creating a nickname for yourself. Or you can listen to us on our networks, CWRN, CosmicWavesRadio.com. We also have our website, and you can also always hear any of the interviews that we do on our website at thepeoplespeakradio.org. Now, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes to start our interview with Arsalan Iftikhar. And, Arsalan, we are really thrilled to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me, Vasma.
You're most welcome. Okay, we'll be back in a minute.
The People Speak Radio Show is being broadcast over a Shoutcast stream at CosmicWavesRadio.com. That's CosmicWavesRadio, one word, .com. It is also being broadcast in an interactive audio chat room at PalTalk, www.paltalk.com.
House Resolution 635. This is Immortal Technique. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war in which tens of thousands of civilians were killed. We are told to look upon these deaths as an exaggeration or an acceptable loss in the war on terror. But this administration has lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, and produced phony news reports. People have been imprisoned without charges and tortured and illegal weapons used. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation. Peace.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the People Speak Radio. When the people speak, we make a difference, and that's why we're here, and that's why we bring to you guests of the caliber of Arsalan Iftikhar, who is the legal director of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. Hello, Arsalan. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Vasma. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Arsalan, could you briefly explain to us how the American Islamic, the Council on American Islamic Relations was started and what your role in it is and how you became involved?
Well, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, is the nation's largest American Muslim civil rights and advocacy group. We're headquartered in Washington, D.C., and have 32 chapters around the nation and in Canada. We are the largest civil rights group in the country for American Muslims, and so with that, we sort of serve as the clearinghouse for any discrimination or hate crime against the American Muslim community. I have been with CARE for almost 5 years now, more than 3 years as National Legal Director. I've always been involved in human rights work. I specialize in international human rights law, and always knew that I wanted to be a nonprofit activist, and that brings us to today.
Well, very, very interesting. Arsalan, as you know, all we have to do is turn on our television sets and see the bloodshed, see the carnage, see what's happening in Lebanon today. What is the CARE position on the gross disparity in the Israeli response to the taking of the Israeli soldiers as POWs?
Well, you know, we obviously have, since day one, been calling for a ceasefire on all sides. We believe that there should be a prisoner exchange and that the killing of innocent civilians and targeting of civilian infrastructure should completely end. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it took our government so long to get into this discourse. And, you know, I think we have more faith in the UN and its ability, to broker a lasting ceasefire in this situation.
Well, as you know, today the Israeli tank fire killed four UN observers.
It did.
Yeah, and go right ahead. Go right ahead, Osama.
Well, no, what I was going to say is I think that the killing today of the four UN observers in southern Lebanon will help to bring about some greater context to the greater global public in terms of the atrocities that are going on in the Middle East, particularly the heavy-handed approach and the heavy-handed military response from the Israeli Defense Forces.
You know, Arslan, you know, that's the CARE position. What do you truly see, I mean, given the position that the United States has taken, given the fact that Condoleezza Rice has come forward and said that we are not asking for a ceasefire because we want a permanent solution, to me, that doesn't mean a whole lot, considering there hasn't been a permanent solution to Lebanon for 18 years. And Israel never left fully Lebanon. They never left Shabab Farms. They never relinquished the maps of the minefield. So basically, they reverted to their scorched earth policy in a sense. And they never released any of the prisoners. Given all of these things, how can we, as Arab Americans or Muslim Americans or Americans or anybody that is a believer in humanity and the humane treatment of things, how can we see this keep this from escalating when obviously Israel is intent and the United States is intent on the escalation of what is going on there?
Well, and I think those are all valid points that you bring up. I think that what makes the situation a little bit different in terms of what's going on right now is that I believe that the international community is getting to, you know, getting to see at the forefront what's going on in the Middle East. I think, you know, whether it's, whether it was the massacre at, you know, Sabra and Shatila refugee camps in 82 by, you know, Ariel Sharon, or the atrocities and the humanitarian crisis that the Palestinian population has been suffering for these many years, I think what makes this a little bit different is that for once the whole world is watching, and for once the whole world is getting to see, you know, the heavy-handed policies that the Israeli government and the right-wing elements, within the Likud party are doing. And I think that is going to shatter some of this moral credibility that the Israeli government seems to have, especially here in the American mainstream press and politics.
Well, you know, that brings me to question something that you brought up, the media. You know, already I, as an observer and as an astute observer of the way the media works and how the disparity of information is fed into our communities through these sensationalist style medias, have already witnessed the transition of Israel's position in this. You'll hear the reporters come on the microphone saying things like, well, if Hezbollah insists on continuing to attack Israel, then they have no choice. As if this brutal attack, the most massive portion of this attack, had come under some insane propagation. It's a nation at war, and POWs were taken for the purposes of prisoner exchange, and this massive pulverization of Lebanon is unbelievable. But you can see that already the media has already started to twist the tables. So soon everyone will forget, and suddenly it'll be, well, Hezbollah keeps attacking innocent Israel.
Right, and I think that speaks just to the well-oiled nature of the Israeli government spin machine here in the U.S. I mean, it's something that they are very adept at doing is, you know, getting their message across. And I think that, again, this is the first time where the international community is sort of getting to see firsthand, you know, the byproduct of the Israeli government's aggression. And I think that was highlighted today by, you know, the unfortunate attack at the U.N. outpost and the killing of the U.N. observers.
Absolutely. You know, during my research of Salon, I was, you know, we were talking about the Haji girl song, or Haji, is that what, I don't know, the way it's written, it's Haji.
Yes, girl Haji song. Girl.
Haji girl, is that what it is? Okay.
Yes.
And as I was looking for that, I also ran across the issue of the photographs, the war photographs, being traded off for pornography.
Right.
How is the military addressing that? And why is this not as public an outcry as Abu Ghraib was?
You know, unfortunately, I think it's due to the whole desensitizing of the American public to the you know, unfortunate horrors of war. You know, obviously, we saw the pictures of Abu Ghraib, and, you know, we've heard about, you know, the scandals at Guantanamo Bay and the like, and, you know, the fact that, you know, our government may have partaken in, you know, the extraordinary rendition of suspects to countries where they were going to be tortured. I just believe that we as a global society and we as an American society have, you know, lost all sanctity for human life. And I think that is something that's very dangerous when we see over 2,700 U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq and, you know, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians killed and slaughtered and, you know, things going on all around the world where people are just dying en masse. I think it desensitizes us, and I think that we need to, you know, sort of reconnect with our humanity in order to, you know, be able to view a lot of these, you know, sociopolitical global phenomena in a more holistic manner.
You know, the same, and I know that I've had to argue this position in many cases here, right here on Tal Talk, and listening to the incredible likes of the right-wing media such as Rush Limbaugh when they shriek out this horrific shriek of Islamofascism that is taking over the world, that will kill everything. You know, we hear about that. What is your response to something like that? How can we as people that understand the nature of our and the beauty of Islam, the beauty of the religions and the people of the Middle East.
Sure.
How do we respond?
You know, I think we just have to respond to education. You know, obviously these right-wing pundits are going to, you know, utter these bloody maxims and totally become, you know, part and parcel of our, you know, American colloquial dialogue and discourse. And I think, again, you know, they've been quite adept at that. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, these people couldn't even define half the words they're saying. You know, most people don't even know what a Wahhabi is. You know, most people couldn't really define what they consider to be an Islamist. And I think that people like ourselves who have an understanding not only of the sociopolitical but cultural nuances of that region of the world, you know, need to help reach out more to our American neighbors, friends, and coworkers to help explain, you know, and give more context to things. And I think that it's through a lack of education, and I think that you can only counter that by increasing the level of education.
Well, absolutely. And what is it that CURE does to help increase the level of education, to help to curtail the hate crimes that have been rampant since 9/11, and the racial profiling that happens in the United States? Is there anything that you, in particular, that you do to address these issues?
Sure. You know, what we try to do is obviously take a proactive and positive approach to things that, you know, unfortunately might be, you know, watershed events. For example, last year in 2005, when Newsweek magazine broke the story of potential Quran desecration at Guantanamo Bay, which led to, you know, to riots and the killing of 17 people in riots around the Muslim world, we actually launched the Explore the Quran campaign, where we gave out free copies of an English translation of the Quran to any American who sought it. And today we received over 30,000 requests by average Americans wanting to know and learn more about Muslims and Islam and what we believe. And I think that is just, you know, right this year, you know, during the whole Danish cartoon controversy, you know, when you know, we had, you know, idiotic Muslims, you know, bombing and firebombing, you know, Kentucky Fried Chickens in the Middle East, we launched an Explore Muhammad campaign where we gave out free copies of a PBS documentary entitled Muhammad, Legacy of the Prophet, to anyone who wanted it again. And today we've received nearly 20,000 requests for the DVDs. And so, you know, we obviously tried to take events that are, you know, that have international significance, but we tried to have a proactive and positive educational approach to these things.
Well, that's a wonderful way of handling. I applaud you. Congratulations. And you guys heard it. You can get a free copy of the Quran or a free copy of the DVD. I'm sure that you can find out more information through the CARE website. Let me ask you something. And, Arsalan, today I was reading an article, as I was doing some research, and according to an article that we read, there's something that seems to be coming light as far as the air marshals are concerned. Now, the identities of these air marshals were, of course, concealed, but they had a private interview with Channel 7 News. They were talking about the quota campaign that they were obligated and required to do, that if they didn't report at least one report a month of what they thought or felt was suspicious activity in airplanes, that they wouldn't get raises, they would have no bonuses, there would be no awards and no special assignments for these people. Now, something like this, I think, now, the air marshals felt that innocent passengers were being entered into the International Intelligence Database, being considered suspicious persons, acting in suspicious manners on aircraft. And one of the air marshals said, and they did nothing wrong. But because of this quota campaign, they're required to fill this quota, and if they don't, like I said, their actual bonuses, literal bonuses, would be taken away from them. So here these people are, if you take a picture, you're being reported to the surveillance detection report, which puts you literally on a list of suspected people. Isn't this let's face it, come on, Absalon, we're going to have to think about this, and if I was an air marshal and I was going to pick somebody, isn't this prime racial profiling? Who are they going to look at first? They're going to look at the Middle Easterners.
Absolutely. I mean, it's racial profiling at its very best. I mean, unfortunately, it's not new to the, you know, civil rights history of our nation. I mean, if you look at, you know, the 80s, the adage was driving while black. And we all know that, you know, police officers around the nation, you know, had quotas to fulfill. And, you know, who was being pulled over in a disparate manner? It was definitely, you know, young African-American males. And so this is just something that is, you know, sort of the next chapter in the civil rights history of America, this whole post 9/11 world and legal paradigm that we live in today.
Wow, that's a fascinating analogy. Exactly, the new civil rights. How amazing. I guess, you know, for whatever reason, we know we do equate this as racism in its most extreme event, but, you know, we always want to somehow make everything else more important than our own issues. But the reality is that especially in the escalation of the violence, the response by many of the Muslims that are angered, that are hurt, that are maimed, that have lost family and friends to these violent escalations, it is definitely going to be a much higher incidence of racial profiling, and it is the civil rights issue of the future. Arsalan, we're going to take a break right now, and we've got a couple of public service announcements for everybody. For those of you that have just joined us, we'll be back in a moment with Arsalan Iftikhar, the legal director of CARE, And thank you all for being here. It is a pleasure having you all.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
PalTalk is the largest and most popular internet chat community in the world, with over 39 million registered users worldwide. There are approximately 4 million active users and between 30 and 70,000 people using PalTalk at any given time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The PalTalk support staff cover 32 basic languages and countless dialects. PalTalk is pretty much comparable to any major city in the world, the virtual online equivalent of a global community.
It's really great to see how full the room is. I don't know if Salon can't see the room, but we have, dozens and dozens of people in here this evening, Salon, and a lot of them are clamoring to talk to you. But I still have some issues that I'd like to discuss with you, Salon. One of the things that I, as an Arab Christian, here on PalTalk, in my political activist life, in mainstream American life, and ever since I was a child, as a matter of fact, I have dealt with the bigotry concerning the Middle Eastern culture. What would you have, and the reality is that everybody thinks that, especially these days, I get it all the time, how we know what kind of people you are. You have no rights. You are evil. You chop people's heads off. That's how you deal with your issues. You can't live with peace. You can't live with yourselves. How do you respond to this kind of mentality, Arsalan?
Well, in many ways, Basma, it's indicative of what we've seen in terms of the media and its portrayal of Muslims and Arabs in the Middle East in general. I mean, when somebody who doesn't have a lot of exposure or, might not know any Muslims or Arabs, when they see 10-second sound bites on a, continuous basis, basically perpetuating, the myth of, the olive-skinned, beard-toting, turban around the head, AK-47 in hand, Arab male and perpetuate a lot of these stereotypes that, many Americans already have. It really does nothing to further that dialogue. It only, subconsciously embeds as, the sort of cultural conditioning in terms of, focusing on these people as the other, as opposed to, viewing the similarities and the nuanced differences in understanding them in the global context. And I think that, again, a lot of it goes to the way that, the rest of the world is conveyed, whether it's through newspapers or television or the news or even politicians in terms of the sort of myopic worldview that the many people in power in the U.S. have today. It's just something, it's getting out. It's mobilizing grassroots and, educational efforts in trying to sort of demystify the other.
One of the other things that we always hear, and we're constantly fighting this misconception, but of course, again, all based back down to the issues of the media, is the fact that a lot of people in this country believe that Muslims are not as vocal as they should be. I know that they speak out. I know that they demonstrate en masse all over the planet. Can you tell us how CARE speaks out on these issues and maybe just verify that, in fact, the Muslim community is constantly speaking out?
And Basma, if I you know, as I count the number of times I've gone on international media outlets, you know, condemning some act of violence that was supposedly committed in the name of Islam, or you know, trying to offer context and explain to people what Islam means and what Islam stands for in terms of these issues, I mean, I'd be able to retire. It's something that, you know, we as Muslims, the leading American Muslim organization since 9/11, even before 9/11, have been vociferous in standing up and denouncing any act of terror or violence that is claimed to be to have been committed in the name of Islam. Unfortunately, you know, some people aren't willing to listen. Some people just want to perpetuate this clash of civilizations theory, you know, that was coined by Professor Huntington, and it's something that, you know, is part and parcel of, you know, the struggle that we're focused on today, and we're trying to reach out to those people who are open-minded, who are willing and wanting to understand both sides of the issue and see both sides of the coin. It's those people that we're trying to get across to, because we believe that those are the ones that are representative of mainstream American and international society.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that Huntington probably got that confused with the Clash of the Titans on one of the sci-fi flicks. Again, here we end up knowing the truth about how Islam is. Speak to us about your relationship with Islam.
Well, I mean, for me, Islam is the most important thing in my life. It helps to formulate everything that I am as a person, you know, being a human rights lawyer, being an activist for the human rights of all individuals, regardless of their race, religion, socioeconomic status, or anything, is firmly rooted in Islam. That's what Islam teaches me and teaches all Muslims. And, you know, I think that, you know, the one thing that I do know more than anything else is that, you know, I couldn't be prouder to be a Muslim, and I couldn't be prouder to be an American. I think that being an American allows me to practice my faith, you know, much better than, you know, had I been born in, you know, the vast majority of Muslim nations on earth. And so, you know, being an American Muslim is not antithetical, and they're not mutually exclusive terms. I think they're completely compatible, and I think that they, you know, in many ways are very similar, and I actually take a great deal of comfort and solace in that, and that's what continues to drive me every single day.
Arsalan, talk to us about the Patriots Act. How, I mean, I know for myself and for many of the people here and many of our audience viewers, because we have done these kinds of shows and we get this feedback, and we know how much concern Americans that know are about the Patriots Act. Tell us, as a legal, not as an authority on the Patriots Act, but as a lawyer, as a what do you see coming out of the Patriots Act?
Well, I mean, I see a lot of stuff coming out of the USA Patriot Act. I mean, there shouldn't be having given over 200 speeches on USA Patriot. I mean, obviously, I think it's something that should be of concern to all Americans. I think that it opens the legal floodgates in terms of, you know, presidential power and, you know, limiting checks and balances. I mean, most people don't know, first of all, that the USA Patriot Act was 348 pages long and trumps over 50 federal statutes that are already on the book. That's unheard of. When one law trumps 50 federal laws that already exist, you know, people always assume, well, you know, I have nothing to hide, so, you know, that's something that, you know, shouldn't really affect me, and that's not true at all. I mean, because of USA Patriot, federal officials can go and, you know, check your library records, what movies you rented out from Blockbuster, what college student groups you belong to. You know, it greatly defines the scope of domestic terrorism. For example, the sheriff of Hennepin County, Minnesota, which is the home county for St. Paul, Minneapolis, once declared the college student group anti-racist action and students against war to be domestic terrorists under the auspices of USA Patriot. And I think that that's very dangerous when, you know, when a law helps to chill the First Amendment rights to speech and association that, you know, we as Americans hope that will think. I mean, I could talk for hours on USA Patriot, but that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when you hear the Students Against War under the Patriots Act can be considered terrorists in the United States of America, you know, I think that says it all. It's an amazing, it's impossible to believe. I still can't believe it.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go, guys. That's the Patriots Act for you. Now, let me ask you something. What are the chances of rescinding or altering the Patriots Act so that it's not as abusive to our constitutional rights?
Well, that was the whole debate that was going on last year. In 2005, the Patriot Act was set to sunset, and obviously there was vigorous mobilization both at the grassroots and national level in terms of making sure that it wasn't going to be renewed. Groups like the ACLU and even the American Conservative Union and Gun Owners of America, both liberal and conservative organizations, mobilized together to rally against the USA Patriot Act because people, both Republicans and Democrats, understood that this was a bipartisan issue. This was something that affected all Americans equally, and was something that was dangerous to the social fabric of the American legal system. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, you know, we lost the battle. You know, the Patriot Act was allowed to be renewed. There are going to be a few more checks and balances on it, but, you know, for the most part, it remained pretty much untouched. And again, you know, it remained untouched because, you know, we are, you know, the seemingly never-ending, you know, war on terror, you know, but the problem is that this is, you know, completely changing the American constitutional way of life, and I think that, you know, the longer that we do that, the more successful, you know, the terrorists are in helping to, you know, disintegrate what makes America so great, and that's our democratic system of constitutional governance.
So you're saying that the Patriot Act has basically not been challenged as much as you think it may have due to the smokescreen of continuous violence and the escalation?
Well, no, I mean, I think it has been challenged. I think that the reason that it finally overcame and won the vigorous, you know, challenge to it again was, you know, the whole deference to, you know, to President Bush and the Justice Department and the War on Terror, and I think that that's something that as Americans we have to come to fear. You know, we must stand firm in terms of, you know, who we are as Americans and what the United States stands for.
Who are we as Americans of Arab descent in this country?
We are Americans just like anyone else, and that's something that, you know, it might take a little more time in order for us to make our place, but, you know, we have to understand that just like any other minority group in this nation, you know, again, we are the next chapter in the civil rights history of America. You know, during World War I, German and Italian Americans were vilified in the press and in political circles. I mean, the play of Beethoven was banned in, you know, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania because he was German, and, you know, many German Americans had to Americanize their names in order to feel more a part of American society. World War II, we interned over 140,000 Japanese Americans in excess of 7 years. The African American civil rights movement continues till today. You know, this is just, again, this is just adding on to the civil rights history book of America, and we just have to make sure that we don't repeat some of the mistakes of the past in order to make this country better for the future.
Let me ask you something, Aslan. You know, when we talk about these groups, I know in the various groups that I work with, we work with here in the Michigan area within the Latino American communities, and many of the organizations here kind of work together. How receptive are people, especially in light of the racial profiling and the unfair media biased about Muslims? How quickly do people jump on your bandwagon to be associated with CARE?
It's very difficult in many ways. Obviously, you know, there's a stigma, you know, in terms of this growing sense of Islamophobia where people are, you know, tend to distance themselves from anything Muslim or Arab. But what we found is that minority communities, you know, who have been through similar civil rights experiences, you know, do tend to empathize a lot more than you know, the average American might, and so we take a great deal of comfort in the support that we get from other minority communities who've had to deal with their own civil rights movements.
Yeah, I know that it just seems that a lot of people are afraid these days, I think, too. And in all fairness, they have a lot to be afraid of. The escalation of violence against Arab Americans and Muslims in this country has been profound and prolific. I know here that that there are constant reports of bigotry and bias and aggression against Arab Americans. So it is a frightening thing, I think, to a certain extent, to be Muslim or in this world, especially when it comes to the issues of the women of Islam. Obviously, because of their headdress, they're easily targeted, they're easily identified, and I can't even begin to imagine that type of fear on a long-term basis. It seems as if we're living a deja vu in another world that never existed before.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately a part of our reality today, but, you know, we are going to persevere just like so many people have persevered in the past, and hopefully we'll help to make this country a stronger place than before.
Well, we certainly hope so. We're going to take a short break right now, and when we return, we have a lot of hands up, and we'd like to get our audience participation going here. I know a lot of people are really looking forward to asking you some questions, Ed Salon. We are, for those of you that have come into the room late and to the show late, we are interviewing Arsalan Iftikhar, who is the legal director of CARE. CARE is the Council on American Islamic Relations. Please join us at PAL Talk. Every week we have a fascinating show. Tomorrow we'll have Medea Benjamin, who is the Pulitzer Peace Prize nominee that started and helped initiate Code Pink. We'll be back for audience questions with Arsalan right after these public service announcements.
Did you know that President Bush's No Child Left Behind Act mandates that public high schools turn over private student information to military recruiters or risk losing federal funding? Not only that, but the Pentagon has compiled a database of over 30 million young people up to age 17 for the purpose of military recruitment. You can protect your child from unwanted military recruiting by removing their names off both these lists. Go to www.leavemychildalone.org.
The People Speak radio show is being broadcast over a shoutcast stream at CosmicWavesRadio.com. That's CosmicWavesRadio.com. It is also being broadcast in an interactive audio chat room at PalTalk, www.paltalk.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to The People Speak. And tonight the people are speaking with Arsalan Iftikhar from CARE, the legal director of CARE. The first question is going to be from Samir the Galilean. Samir, if you will come to the microphone, give us your first name, and tell us where you're calling from and a brief question for Arsalan. Thank you very much. I guess Samir's having some problems. Okay, let's go to Peace Lover. Peace Lover, if you'll come to the mic, give us your first name and where you're calling from and a brief question for Arsalan.
Hi, Arsalan. Thanks for coming. My name is Mike, California. Arsalan, I wonder if you had any comments on the 15-year-old Iraqi girl, Abir Qasim Hamza, and the media's portrayal, especially on CNN, as her being a woman and not a 15-year-old girl. And the outrage, there must be outrage in the Muslim community over this incident in which a 15-year-old Iraqi girl was stalked, sexually harassed, raped, murdered, and set on fire in Iraq. You know, has there been any response regarding this in the Muslim community, and what are your efforts to address that? Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you calling and asking the question, Mike. I think that unfortunately, what we're starting to see now, and we, what we haven't seen in Iraq, you know, is a complete desensitization, you know, of human suffering, you know, whether it's the massacre at Haditha to Abu Ghraib to, you know, the daily killing of scores of innocent Iraqis. I think this case, you know, just, you know, helped to highlight, you know, the growing humanitarian crisis that is going on in Iraq and how far we actually are from, you know, even remotely winning the hearts and minds of anyone, let alone winning the hearts and minds of Iraqis. I think that it's the job of our military to hold our soldiers accountable, you know, under the auspices of law of anyone who commits any sort of atrocious, you know, war crimes or crimes which violate the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I think that, you know, if you are going to win the hearts and minds of anyone, you know, obviously you want to make sure that, you know, that your people are abiding by the laws. You know, many people in the Muslim and Arab world feel as though there's a sort of double standard out there, a global double standard in which, you know, America can essentially do whatever, you know, we choose, but we hold others to a standard that we ourselves are not holding ourselves to. And I think that it's important for us to help to make sure that, you know, the people who are responsible for these atrocious acts are held accountable. And the only way that we can do that is by making sure that not only our elected leaders, but also our media outlets, you know to show this side of the human suffering in Iraq as well.
Thank you, Arsalan. Our next audience participant is Dennis Jimenez. Dennis, if you'll come to the microphone, give us your first name, where you're calling from, and your brief question for Arsalan.
Hello, Arsalan. Good to talk with you. My name is Dennis. I'm from Orlando, Florida. I was curious to know if CARE has any legal involvement in trying to ensure the rights or of the prisoners in Guantanamo. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Dennis. CARE, actually, we haven't actually been directly involved in the legal proceedings at Guantanamo. The Center for Constitutional Rights, CCR, Amnesty International, and Human Rights Watch, organizations with far larger legal staffs than ourselves, you know, have been more involved in the day-to-day legal proceedings there. But obviously, we've been kept apprised, you know, of all the reports coming out of Guantanamo, all the FOIA requests, because of our, you know, continued coalition work with groups like Amnesty and CCR. And so, from a policy and you know, sort of public media perspective, you know, we are involved in that sense that we are trying to help, you know, publicize, you know, all of the public information that's coming out of Guantanamo and making sure that, you know, groups like Amnesty International and Center for Constitutional Rights are getting the sort of support that they deserve.
Thank you, Arsalan. You know, we're going to try to get Samir the Galilean back up here. I think he may have a little bit of an issue with lag, so we're going to give Samir another chance to come up here. Samir, please come to the microphone. State your name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Arsalan, please.
Okay, thank you. I hope that my voice is clear. Well, I really don't know what to say. I think you don't hear me now, or what? Or voice is low. Well, I haven't used the mic for some time, so I will try as much as I could to let people hear what I think. Well, in fact, I was in South Lebanon during the war. I left South Lebanon tears in Friday evening. I'm not going now to really to ask or to be engaged in political questions, but I just want to tell people that that people are really suffering because of the Israeli attacks. Here, I was in a hospital.
I'm sorry, Samir. I can't make out. I don't know, Arsalan. Were you able to make out what he was saying?
I could not.
And I could not either. I'm sorry, Samir. Your microphone is just not coming through clearly. We apologize. Our next audience participant is Mesta Chanagas. Mesta, can you please come to the microphone, give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question for Arsalan.
Yes, thank you, Basima, and thank you, sir, for spending time with us here this evening. My question to you, sir, is this. What can we do right here, right now, in our own communities, wherever we may be, to teach people that Islam and that Arabs are not something to be feared, are not people to be feared? What can we do right here, right now? If you have any kind of tactics whatsoever on how to achieve this goal, it would be highly, highly appreciated. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. I appreciate the question. I think that, you know, what we can do right here, right now, as an American society, is at the local grassroots level, is reach out to your friends and neighbors. You know, open up the Yellow Pages and find the nearest mosque or the nearest Arab cultural center, and give them a call and see what sorts of events that they're having. You know, if you're involved in civic activities, you know, reach out to groups different than yourself. And this is not just limited to Muslims or Arabs. You know, reach out to everyone. I think that we have to understand that, you know, we are a global community, and the world, with the advent of the Internet and instantaneous communications, is shrinking at an astronomical rate, so that things that happen in Madrid or London or Bali have a direct impact on us as Americans every single day. And so I think that's why it's important for us to, you know, help reach out to those, you know, that might have a different experience than us, and help to learn from each other, share our experience with them, and share their experience with ourselves, and help to, you know, educate, you know, our children and our future in terms of making sure that America is even more of a pluralistic society than when we were born.
Thank you very much, Arsalan. We have another question from a gentleman by the name of Islam 206. Islam, if you'll come to the microphone, give us your name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Arsalan, please. I'm afraid we've lost Islam. Now, that's a profound statement, isn't it, Arsalan? We've just lost all of Islam.
Well, my job here is done, then.
That's it. You've done it. We've accomplished our mission. Speaking of accomplished missions, what is your take on the Bush administration?
In general?
In general. Or specifically.
Well, I mean, I have said that many. I mean, I think that George W. Bush is a terrible president. I've said it on TV. I've said it in speeches, and I'll say it again today. I think that is what makes America so great, is that we have the ability to, you know, freely express our political views and opinions, and not face any sort of repercussion for them. I mean, you know, at a time where President Bush's approval rating is below, you know, 30%, you know, there's 70% of the American public that agrees with me, and I think that it is our job as Americans to not defer everything to the president's authority, and that we need to challenge the authority that is coming out of Washington, because we have learned from historical precedent and even from this administration that not everything that we do as Americans is right. I think that what's important for us as Americans to understand is that, yes, we do live in the greatest democracy in the world, but we are still imperfect ourselves. We are the most perfect of an imperfect lot. I mean, that does not make us perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and I think that it will only help to, you know, further solidify and strengthen the fabric of our democracy if we challenge, you know, policies that we believe to be in contravention of American legal and constitutional principles. And so that is, you know, that's why I exist, and that is my job, and to make sure that those disenfranchised voices who don't feel as though they are being listened to have a voice, and realize that they have people who not only agree with them, but fully support them. In fact, most of the country now, you know, believes that President Bush is not doing a good job. And so it is imperative for each and every one of us to go out and vote in the midterm elections here in November in the 2008 presidential election and make sure that, you know, our political voices are heard. It's something that is part and parcel of what makes us the greatest democracy on earth.
Well, absolutely. You know, I have a question, and it's a question is from Carrie Minaj, our board director. Carrie's curious. He wants to know, do you think that Israel has a disproportionate level of influence on government and media in this country, Sivan?
I think that Israel has an amazing amount of influence within the political system here in the United States, and I wish that every minority special interest group was as well-oiled as the pro-Israeli lobby is here. I think that they are a testament to determination and the ability to advocate for their beliefs and for their position. And I find that to be admirable. I think that it gives all of us, it should give all of us inspiration to, you know, be as strong and as effective of an advocate for our positions as these people who have, you know, been able to fully take advantage of everything that our democracy has to offer. And so I think that they are something that we should, you know, look to in terms of how better to empower our voice. I mean, we've been talking about empowerment, and, you know, I think nobody exemplifies that, especially within the political realm, better than the supporters of Israel do.
Well, absolutely, and a lot of money goes a long way, too.
Yeah, of course.
That really helps.
I think that, you know, Muslims, Arabs, and other people need to put money behind their advocates and their positions because, you know,
exactly.
We know that money talks. It's a reality.
It absolutely is a reality. We have a couple more questions from our audience. Once again, Peace Lover, come to the mic, please, and your name and a brief question for us, Salon. We're going to try to get a couple more people onto the mic before we have to close out for the evening, people. This has been a great show. Peace Lover, come to the mic.
Hi, Mike again from California. Arsalan, I was wondering, does CARE have any political clout, and can they do anything regarding the death today of the UN, I believe they were soldiers in Lebanon, or, you know, is there anything that CARE can do politically to influence what's going on over there and stopping the war? Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. We as CARE, you know, obviously are trying to use whatever influence we have to make sure that the American public, our elected leaders, and the media understand what is going on in the Middle East. We do have political clout, and that's something that, you know, was growing every day. You know, our most effective platform is definitely the media. Our daily CareNet email press releases go out to over 500,000 people a day worldwide and over 12,000 international media outlets. And so most media outlets, whether it's CNN, BBC, Al-Jazeera, Al Jazeera, you know, will come to CARE in terms of getting news from the American Muslim community. And so, you know, that's our best avenue of, disseminating information and making sure the public opinion is aware of what's going on in the world. And if you would like to sign up for our email press release, you can go to www.carecair.com, and you can sign up there. That's where you can also get free copies of the Quran or free DVDs of the PBS documentary, Muhammad, Legacy of a Prophet, for your own personal viewing, to share with your family and friends, or to give as a gift. I think, you know, what Mestel was saying earlier, it goes a long way in terms of helping to educate, get a copy of the DVD and invite some friends over to watch it, you know, have a documentary viewing. I think that, you know, that sort of personal, you know, intimate interaction will not only help to, you know, strengthen the social bonds, but it will also help to educate people as well.
Well, you heard it, and just so you'll know, Arsalan, during this entire program in our virtual auditorium, we have been putting in the CARE websites, among other things, including the information about CARE and things like that, and we've been getting an incredible response to it. Our next question has come from Mitsuk. Mitsuk, could you please come to the mic, give us your first name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Arsalan.
It's Mitsuk, and I'm calling from Toronto, Canada. My question is, what advice do you give to average people who are supportive of Lebanon and against Israelis' atrocities against Lebanon and in Palestine? What advice do you give average citizens, both in Canada and the States? What can we do to stop this war? Thank you very much.
Call and write your elected leaders. You know, you live in Toronto, Canada. You know, one of the earliest casualties of the Israeli airstrikes on Lebanon were the killing of 8 Canadian citizens. And unfortunately, there was little to no coverage in the Western press of this atrocity. And if Canadian citizens were writing in to the Prime Minister's office, to their members of Parliament, you know, demanding that, you know, investigations be opened, that, you know, any sort of foreign aid in terms of military aid to Israel, if it's given, you know, be studied, that is the one way that you are going to resonate in the highest political echelons, because at the end of the day, politicians have to answer to you. We are their constituents. And if their constituents feel as though, you know, that there is something wrong with our country's foreign policy in the Middle East, they want to hear about it. And you know, just like the pro-Israeli lobby will have thousands and thousands of people, they have been calling in to congressmen and senators, you know, calling for the unconditional support of Israel, and the House passed a resolution that only four or eight people voted against. I mean, that is due to effective grassroots mobilization. And I think that, you know, as average Americans, average Canadians, that is what we can do, is to make sure that our elected leaders and officials know about exactly what's going on and how we feel.
Absolutely. Now, you heard it from Arslan Iftikhar, a member of CARE, the legal director, and this has been a fascinating show, Arslan, so informative. The voice of Muslim America, articulate, metered, moderate, the voice of reality, the voice on the ground. I just want everybody to know that we're very fortunate to have the caliber of people that come to our show. Tomorrow night, as you know, Medea Benjamin, Nobel Prize, Peace Prize nominee, and the founder of Code Pink will be with us. You can go to our website and check out all the fascinating guests that we're going to have with us. And you can hear all of the past shows. I want to thank our admins. I want to thank our producer, Mike. I want to thank our board director, Philly. I want to thank John Neal, my co-host, who wasn't feeling well tonight and is recording this. I want to thank all the people in the audience that have helped to make this show exactly what it is, a place where the people can speak and make a big difference, and that's what we do. When the people speak, we make a difference. Thank you all for coming tonight. Arsalan, if you'll bear with us for just one moment while we close the show, we will be talking to you afterwards.
Thank you for having me.
You are most welcome, sir.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief fountain, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.